Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 15, which I will entitle Jerusalem is a Useless Vine. This is a very easy chapter, just 8 verses long. It was given at the same time as the previous prophecies in Ezekiel, somewhere around 592 to 590. This is a few years before the Babylonian siege began in 588, and just a few years before Jerusalem was destroyed in 586. And so we begin. The word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, how is the wood of a vine better than that of a branch on any of the trees in the forest? Is wood ever taken from it to make anything useful? Do they make pegs from it to hang things on? And after it is thrown on the fire as fuel, and the fire burns both ends and charred the middle, is it then useful for anything? If it was not useful for anything when it was whole, how much less can it be made into something useful when the fire has burned it and it is charred? Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, as I have given the wood of the vine among the trees of the forest as fuel for the fire, so will I treat the people living in Jerusalem. I will set my face against them. Although they have come out of the fire will yet consume them. And when I set my face against them, you will know that I am the Lord. I will make the land desolate because they have been unfaithful, declares the Sovereign Lord. Now, the prophecy begins with a rhetorical question. Verse 2, Son of man, how is the wood of a vine better than that of a branch on any of the trees in the forest? Well, that rhetorical question has an expected answer. And the answer is this. The wood of a vine is never better than the branches of any other tree. You can't make a peg from it to hang something on the wall or to hammer a tent down with. You can't make anything useful out of it. And if you burn it, it burns up so fast, it's not useful for anything. Now in verse 4, God says that, and you might say, well, that's the same thing that's true of wood. If you burn wood up, it's not good for anything either. But the difference is that a vine burns so fast, you can't cook anything with it. You can't do anything with it. It won't keep you warm. Now, this comparison of Israel to a vine is quite appropriate because Israel is often compared to a vine. Let me give you four examples from the Old Testament. Psalms 80, verse 8, you uprooted a vine from Egypt. Talking about God did that. You uprooted a vine from Egypt. You drove out the nations. That's in Canaan. You drove out the nations and planted Canaan with the vine. The vine was Israel, which was entrapped in Egypt in slavery, and then the vine was planted after the pagan nations were driven out of Canaan. The vine of Israel was planted in the promised land. Isaiah 5, verses 1 through 2. I will sing about the one I love, a song about my loved one's vineyard. The one I love had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He broke up the soil, cleared it of stones, and planted it with the finest vines. He built a tower in the middle of it and even dug out a winepress there. He expected it to yield good grapes, but it yielded worthless grapes. So Israel here in Isaiah is compared to a worthless vineyard producing worthless grapes. Hosea 10:1. Israel is a lush vine. It yields fruit for itself. The more his fruit increased, the more he increased the altars. The better his land produced, the better they made the sacred pillars. In other words, God blessed them and they responded to those blessings by building more pagan altars. Jeremiah 2:21. I planted you a choice vine. Hosea says it was a lush vine, Israel was, and Jeremiah says it was a choice vine from the very best seed. How then could you turn into a degenerate foreign vine? So the metaphors about Israel being a vine typically talk about a vine that's gone bad. And so here we see the wood of the vine. When that vine is not fruitful, there's no fruit. And the vine that's left behind that bore no fruit, it's no good either. It's good for absolutely nothing except firewood. But when it's used for firewood, a vine's not even good for that because it burns up so quickly. Now in verse 2, God addresses Ezekiel as Son of Man, and this is apparent in every chapter, I think, that we've gone over. God constantly calls Ezekiel Son of Man, and as I have said so many times before, There are a couple of theories for that. One theory is that God is trying to keep Ezekiel humble by saying, you have the characteristics of a man, and a man is finite. He puts his pants on one leg at a time, so don't get uppity, Ezekiel. Don't think you're great because you're having all these visions. The other theory is that God was consciously trying to create a type of Jesus. Ezekiel prophesied against a rebellious nation, and he prophesied that the temple was going to be destroyed. Likewise, the antitype Jesus did the same thing. He prophesied against a rebellious house, and he prophesied that their temple was going to be destroyed. Matthew 24, verses 1 through 3, not one stone of this temple will be left on top of another before this generation passes away, he later on said. Now in verse 4, Yahweh says, when fire burns the ends of a vine and chars the middle, is it then useful for anything? Does the reference to ends of the vine have any meaning? It could. Here's option number one. This shows how quickly and thoroughly vines burn. You light it anywhere, and before you know it, the fire's already gone to the end of the vine, and it's gone. Option number two. Both ends of Israel were burnt, and Jerusalem in the middle would be burnt in 586. In other words, northern Israel was destroyed in 722, 586. Southern Israel's going to be destroyed, and Jerusalem is right in the middle. It's going to be burnt too. The middle is mentioned also in verse 4. The fire burns both ends and chars the middle. So there could be a reference to the northern 10 tribes, the southern 10 tribes as the both ends, and Jerusalem in the middle. Option number 3. One end of the vine symbolizes the northern 10 tribes of Israel who were overturned by Assyria under Sargon II in 722 BC. The other end of the vine is Egypt, which is south of Jerusalem. And Egypt, of course, is pressing on Judah. Remember, Necho II killed Josiah in 609 BC, and then Necho II took Josiah's son Jehoahaz in captivity to Egypt in the same year. So Assyria hit Israel from the north, 722. Egypt hit Israel from the south, or Judah from the south, in 609. And right in the middle is Jerusalem. There could be a reference to that. I like option number two better. One end of the vine is the northern kingdom. The other end of the vine is the southern kingdom. And Jerusalem is in the middle. But whatever the reference is, we know that all of Israel is going to be completely destroyed and burn up, which is exactly what happened in 586. Now in verse 5, God says that if the vine was not useful for anything when it was whole, if Israel was not useful for anything before it gets burnt down in 586, now there God is slamming Israel in its undestroyed state because it was so idolatrous and full of bloodshed. So this is an a fortiori argument. If Israel is useless before it's burnt, how much more useless is it going to be after it's burnt down? How much less can Jerusalem be made into something useful when the fire has burned it up? Verse 6, therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Now, that title, Sovereign Lord, capitalized in the NIV, the S is, Sovereign Lord. That's the title he uses of himself over and over and over again in Ezekiel's prophecies, which, of course, gives us the idea that God is in charge of history. He's in charge of the rise and fall of empires. He's in charge of sieges. He's in charge of bringing down pompous cities with great walls. And so the Sovereign Lord says, I'm going to burn you up, Jerusalem. As I have given the wood of the vine among the trees of the forest as fuel for the fire, so will I treat the people living in Jerusalem. In other words, the vine is going to be used as fuel, even though it's not good fuel. But if you use it as fuel for the fire, it burns up pretty quick. And that's what's going to happen to you in Jerusalem. You're going to burn up pretty quick. Verse 7, God says, I will set my face against them, against the people of Israel. Although they have come out of the fire will yet consume them. So the people of Judah come out of the fire, and then they go back into the fire. What does that mean? Well, Gill and Clark say, option number one, that this refers to the fact that the people of Israel will move from one calamity to another. As we say in English, they will jump out of the frying pan into the fire. Those people of Judah that escape the famine and pestilence in Jerusalem, they're going to fall by the sword. And those who escape the sword and the famine and pestilence before that, they're going to get carried into captivity. So doesn't matter which fire gets them, some kind of fire is going to get the people of Jerusalem. Either famine, pestilence in the city, or you're going to get stabbed and killed when the Babylonians finally break through the walls and start hacking up everybody in the city. Or if you don't get killed by the Babylonians coming into the city with the sword, they'll take you off into captivity. It doesn't matter. Your goose is cooked. Now going from fire to fire in verse 7, although they have come out of the fire will yet consume them. Going from fire to fire, that could refer to the fact that they went through the fire of the Assyrian invasion in 722 when Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom, went down to Sargon II of Assyria. That's one fire. The remnant is left, Judah, and then Judah gets chunked into another fire, the Babylonians. I think those options are equally reasonable, and so I'll report that and let you decide. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with chapter 15, a very somber chapter, and now we're prepared to go to Ezekiel 16, which I will entitle The Lord's Faithless Bride. So we go from an agricultural metaphor showing how corrupt Jerusalem and Judah were, and we will, in our next chapter, go to a marital metaphor to show how degenerate Jerusalem and Judah were. So I hope you stay tuned with me for that discussion of chapter 16, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion of chapter 15.